Welcome to the Skillful Living Room. Our host is Dr. Michael Finkelstein. Michael is a highly respected and successful medical doctor who practices integrative medicine, combining traditional and holistic philosophies, concepts, and wisdom from the full spectrum of human experience across time and throughout the world. This program offers a different perspective on issues such as common medical conditions and their underlying causes, and topics such as healthcare policy and the controversial recommendations coming from the medical establishment. This is not a program that prescribes take this or that to treat illness. There is no quick fix. Instead, this program offers a more open-minded and practical approach to living that can result in greater health for each of us and ultimately a healthier society. Here is Michael, the founder of Sunraven, a center for holistic and skillful living in Bedford, New York.
Welcome to the Skillful Living Room. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Finkelstein, and today's show should be very interesting. I found myself actually watching a movie that a friend of mine brought for me to see, a documentary about a Polish immigrant physician who had a very novel and innovative scientific approach to treating people with cancer, and found himself embroiled in a 14 or 15-year battle with the authorities in the state of Texas where he was practicing, as well as the FDA. And as I watched this movie, I realized that this was really a societal issue. Obviously, the issues regarding medical treatments can be controversial, especially when they're researched by individuals apart from the academic medical institutions. However, we still face the dilemma of trying to do what's best for people. When I saw this movie, I thought this would be a very important subject to bring to light today. And to join me in that discussion then is the producer and director of the movie, Eric Marola. And as a way of introduction, I want to just say that Eric began working as a freelance artist and art director for many of the top Madison Avenue advertising agencies. But like many people, found that somewhere along the course of time, he had a higher calling. He ultimately launched his own production company and had many commercial clients, including Rolling Stones, Matt Taibbi, Volkswagen, Campbell Soup, etc. He wound up working most recently with Michael Moore to develop and co-design and co-direct a one-minute animated sequence for Michael Moore's new feature documentary, Capitalism, A Love Story. But pertinent to today's show, after spending years studying his subject and became aware of him, he realized that the story was one that was so important that it needed to be told that he actually went out and produced and directed his own documentary, quite an achievement in and of itself. So with that introduction, I'd like to welcome Eric Marola to our show. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I guess the first question I have is, given your background, how did you get interested in the story of Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski?
Well, I've always been sort of interested in the sort of alternative medical world, and I just sort of happened to come across a book called The Cancer Industry, written by a man named Ralph Moss, who was the former public relations director of Sloan Kettering in New York City, Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And he was fired for blowing the whistle on a substance that was being studied that they, because it wasn't patentable, they sort of had to cover it up. And his job was to tell the world that, you know, this thing isn't working, this substance isn't working, yet he was good friends with a scientist who was finding good results, and he just couldn't take it and, you know, blew the whistle. And, of course, he got fired and decided to write a book called The Cancer Industry. And in that book, he covered a few different cancer treatments. I guess he, like I, when you first are awoken to it, you sort of see what else is out there. And he had a chapter on Brzezinski. And what stood out to me about Brzezinski, unlike some of the other treatments that we, some of us may or may not know about when it comes to cancer treatment, is that here is a guy that made a genuine scientific discovery outside of treating cancer. You know, just first of all, finding a strain of peptides, you know, that had never been discovered before. He synthesized them later. He's got patents. He's got the FDA now cooperating with him. It's in clinical trials. And, you know, he basically, and on top of that, you look at one individual scientist who will be hopefully the first scientist in the history of this planet, really, that has gone through the same motions that a pharmaceutical company would without that kind of funding that they have, and is might come out the other side, you know, to benefit all of us. And that just couldn't put that that down. I thought that in and of itself is just so miraculous, aside from what he's doing for cancer patients, if you know what I mean. So.
Right. No, I think that that's very true. And even aside from the, as you said, the medical findings, what I found very important about this is what he had to go through, however, even though he's done this on his own, it really was quite a battle. And in fact, he's still immersed in that battle, as I understand it.
That's right. It wasn't like he didn't want to participate with the industry. He very early on in the 70s, after he came to the United States from Poland, he was working at Baylor College of Medicine in Texas. And at that time, believe it or not, our own National Cancer Institute was giving him money, taxpayer grant money, and to study the peptides. And then they wanted to sort of bring him into the establishment, but he would lose control over his entire discovery, and he'd just be an employee. And we're basically where, you know, they could either have changed it, shelved it, weakened it, or who knows what they could have done. He wasn't going to risk that, and he just, that's when sort of he stood up and said, I'm doing this on my own without you guys. So.
Right. And so he really has spent the last maybe 15 or 20 years really employing, you know, a very high standard for quality science, and at the same time has taken care of many patients who, in your documentary, clearly you identified just a handful, but are remarkably grateful for the opportunity to have been given this alternative.
Sure. And it's not just, you know, that fact that he has a great track record with curing cancer with this very novel, non-toxic scientific approach that is based upon some of the same approaches, which is gene-targeted therapy, that, for instance, Stand Up to Cancer, all that recent cancer fundraiser, if you look at and see where their money is going, it's going to all the guys developing new gene-targeted therapies for cancer. It's not new chemos or anything like that. But when you stop and realize that Brzezinski's been doing precisely that since the 70s, and he's got 30-some years of clinical experience doing so, it's very interesting. So it's not like it's some left-field sort of idea that he's got. It's a very mainstream idea. But it's what's really remarkable is that he's curing types of cancer that never before in medical history have been cured. And that's what's really exciting, aside from the easy, not easy ones, but the basic ones like liver and lung and things like that. He's been curing, like for instance, for pediatric brain tumors, like a childhood brain stem glioma. It has never been cured before in any clinical trial setting, you know, involved the FDA in any formal setting. And Brzezinski's the first one to do it, and he has dozens of them. And on top of that, another one called a pediatric pontine glioma, an inoperable pontine glioma, never before, from what I understand, has a phase 3, which is the final phase of testing, ever been greenlit in the history of medicine because it's so difficult to treat. There's never been a substance that has made it that far. And he's been greenlit for that, except now, of course, the battle, as you've seen in the film, now the battle is getting an institution to host that trial, which is a whole other, you know, obstacle. So.
Right. Is he finding it? I mean, you know, the documentary seems to present another problem, which is that he's having a hard time being accepted by these institutions that he ultimately probably would benefit from some collaborative work.
Yeah, it's really interesting. All I can sort of gather is, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not working in that profession, but it seems to be a lot of peer pressure and people being afraid of stepping up and putting their neck on the line, regardless of how real the science is. It's nothing to do with the science and the track record and the FDA's own, you know, data based, you know, showing how successful the treatment is. It has everything to do with it being way too far out of the box and everything to do with, as far as like breaking the sort of mold that the system is used to, you know, working within. So. Yeah, I mean, like for instance, I'll just give you a quick example. A really famous pediatric neurosurgeon named Dr. Ben Carson, who a film was made about him. Cuba Gooding Jr. starred as him. He's still alive. And one of his big things he did was he was able to separate Siamese twins at the head, and they both lived after birth, things like that. And this guy has seen the film, and he said, wow, if you're curing brainstem glioma, we need to have a study here at Johns Hopkins. And little does he know, probably does know now, that Johns Hopkins has already denied to allow the phase 3 brainstem glioma trials to be hosted in their clinic or in their institution. You know what I mean? So now I'm sure he's sort of battling that. You know, we'll see where that ends up, but you know, maybe we need a guy like Ben Carson maybe to step up, and since he's got such a career behind him already, and say, come on, guys, let's do this. It's never been done before. He's clearly been curing these people, so, you know, why not? So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's as I mentioned to you when we talked earlier in the week in preparation, that it's generally not my intent with this show to exaggerate claims of treatments and cures in particular and to lambast the establishment. However, this presents this question, which is how does somebody who has something that seems very promising deal with all the negativity that surrounds him, and how appropriate is that? I mean, to some extent, it upsets me, as it does a lot of other people, that there are some good work out there, and the establishment often makes it very difficult for individuals to really think out of the box and to take any initiative. And it seems like somebody else is pulling the strings and controlling this, and we can point perhaps to our government, or the medical establishment itself, the FDA, clearly. But I wonder if anyone is really in charge, and this is just sort of habitual behavior. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I guess because it's so, I spend so much time with it, and I'm firmly believe it has everything to do with money, and how much sort of financial havoc this drug can create if it is released to the market. And on top of all the other sort of so-called protocols that it doesn't seem to fit within, because it's not coming from Pfizer or anybody else. But it's really interesting because it comes from all levels, everything from the insurance companies to the children's oncology group of this country to the individual institutions. They're all, at least on the front lines, at least to any kind of camera or press, they're going to just say, no, this isn't, there's no way. But then behind the scenes, you know, off the record, they'll, you know, admit how real it is. But it's just the system does not allow this to occur. And I don't know. I mean, I just don't know what to tell you.
Well, there's a frustration here because, you know, there are people who are sick and there are people who are searching for the best protocols that they can find. And even some people have a right to find an alternative protocol if they want, because maybe their priority is just not to have side effects, even if something doesn't isn't yet completely proven, if it's at least known not to be so detrimental compared to what is available, then some people might choose that as the better choice. But we seem to have a situation here and in other places where that's not always possible. And this frustration, I think, is ubiquitous. I hear it all the time in my medical practice, and when I was the medical director of a hospital, people expressed their frustration. So I do want to give the phone number for this show, because if you're listening and you want to call and you want to share a little bit of a story or ask Eric a question about the movie and more of the background of Dr. Brzezinski, I think that is actually would be great today. So the phone number to call in would be 866-606-TALK or 8255. So we have just a few seconds before we go, but I want to suggest that maybe when we pick this up after the break, Eric, that we talk about a little bit about the awareness that you're looking to bring to people and how you went about making this movie to achieve that purpose. So hang on. We'll be back to the Skillful Living Room after a few minute break. You've been listening to the Business Talk Radio Network. Well, welcome back to the Skillful Living Room. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Finkelstein, and I'm talking to Eric Merola, the director and producer of Brzezinski, the movie. And we've been talking about this very interesting story of a Polish immigrant physician who's made some remarkable discoveries as far as the treatment of cancer, particularly very difficult to treat cancers, brain cancers among them. And Eric sort of happened upon this story and did a lot with it. So I guess the question I wanted to get back to then is your intent in making this movie. What was it that you were trying to do with it, and what was the principles that you were wanting to share with your audience?
Well, definitely several things. The first being, helping the public understand that we've been battling this so-called war on cancer since 71, and it seems to be this unwinnable war, at least so far. But in reality, at least one guy, that I chose to take on, Brzezinski, has made great strides in that battle, first of all. And then second is that if you step back and look at it, especially when somebody has 30 years of clinical experience treating cancer successfully with a non-toxic means, and the government is sort of preventing people from having access to it, it's very interesting. Because, like you said earlier before the break, is that we live in this supposedly democratic free country, yet when it comes to the medical system, it's very, very much operates like a dictatorship. And, you know, and understand why the regulations are set up, because we have to have safety regulations and we don't want quacks running around. But in the case of Brzezinski, who had his first cure in 1977, has continued to treat people since, not like it's 100% cure for everyone, but it's still far better and far safer than what is available to people today. My first step, I think, is that once the public understands that this guy exists, his treatment exists, he's been in, you know, FDA clinical trials for as long as he has, and that he's a miniature version of like a Pfizer, and that and people understand how much resistance he's had to go through, I think that once public awareness has gotten to a point where people know about him, where at the point where most people equate cancer with Brzezinski, then I think the next step can be made. Because right now, the FDA and the government, which is basically, you know, pharma sort of pulling the strings, because they're so entrenched in the government, is that they're doing whatever they can to slow it down, the process of getting it approved. They know they can't stop it, because they failed already. They tried to stop it in the 90s, but they wanted to do everything they can to slow it down. So I think that when people see the film, there's a section that shows how there's huge congressional hearings in the 90s when the government was, frankly, trying to throw him in prison for the rest of his life. And so all these patients, and they wanted to take the treatment away from the patients, all these patients came to D.C. from all over the country and yelled and screamed and brought their families and medical records and you name it, and that made a big difference. And because the FDA was forced to allow him to have the clinical trials that they always wanted, to work with the FDA to study it properly. So I think we could have that again, but another round of those, in the sense that we let the public be aware of it and say, let's just approve this already. Especially when you look at countries like Japan, which is going to come, it's really close to being approved over there. It has already been finished the first round of phase 3 trials for colon cancer that spread to the liver. And it was 2 and 3 times the 5-year survival rate versus chemo in the traditional methods over there, their own medical establishment, you know, recording this and monitoring this. So, and it's going to be approved there, and then it can start being used off-label. People are going to be traveling from the U.S. to be treated in Japan, and it's just there's enough science and enough logic and reason to present the case that let's approve it already. But without public awareness and without the public behind it, it's not going to happen very easily. So,
right. So you're hoping that more people will obviously see this movie and make a little bit more noise. And but what happens for those people now who are struggling with cancer and they're struggling perhaps with relatively ineffective treatment for cancer or side effects that are bothering them? Do they have any chance, any access to this treatment protocol?
Yes, they do. There's some really exciting sides of this and some really depressing sides. Basically, in the FDA clinical trials, it is limited because he has to pay for his own clinical trials, which are in the tens of millions of dollars. Phase 3, one trial is $25 million. The government gives him nothing, while they would give Pfizer or anyone else plenty to do so. But, so they're limited to brain cancer and adrenal cancer. So what's really sad is that now, ever since Brzezinski was on Larry King last November, all of a sudden, the FDA started really sort of like hiking up their sort of resistance to allow. You have to get permission from the FDA to be allowed into a clinical trial to be treated with his treatment, which is called antineoplastons. And in the past, in the patients that I show in my film, ordinarily the protocol would be, okay, we'll allow these patients to be treated with your medicine, but they have to fail chemo and radiation first, and then as a last resort, they can come to you. But with enough really deadly brain cancers on the table, they were always able to bypass that. They were able to get what's called a special exception status to be allowed into the trial.
Eric, let me just interrupt you here, because we're going to go right to the break. So we're going to go back to that special exception status for people who are listening, and a little bit more on how to find more information about this protocol. You've been listening to the Skillful Living Room on the Lifestyle Talk Radio Network, and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to the Skillful Living Room. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Finkelstein, and we're talking to the director and producer of the documentary, The Brzezinski Movie, and we were talking about access for those individuals who are facing the predicament of cancer in their lives. And I also wanted to invite you again to call us with any of your questions or stories or suggestions or comments to the show here at 866-606-TALK, 8255. And we'll be happy to discuss with you this very important subject, which is access to innovative and new treatments that maybe not have yet passed through all the hoops and hurdles that the FDA requires of our pharmaceuticals. So, Eric, you were saying, and I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but that's the nature of the show. But get back to access. I mean, that, I think, is really a critical issue.
Sure. Well, if you have brain cancer, you have to enter his clinical trials, as I was talking about earlier. But if you have cancer of any other kind, you know, liver, lung, melanoma, there's a whole separate sort of a way to approach it with Brzezinski. But quickly, I'll just finish up with the FDA clinical trials regarding brain cancer. Most recently, they basically forced every new patient that has brain cancer, even if it's a type of brain cancer such as a brainstem glioma or a pontine glioma, that is basically there's zero track record with conventional treatment ever actually physically curing them, you know, five-year survival, cancer-free. So what they've done is recently, any new patient that comes in with a brain cancer, the FDA is forcing them to fail chemo and radiation before being allowed to be treated by Brzezinski without any exceptions whatsoever, regardless of the situation, regardless of the age of the child, or anything. They don't care anymore. All we can sort of guess is, you know, it's just there, one, like I mentioned earlier, one way to slow it down. My own cousin, 30 years old, diagnosed with a glioblastoma less than a month ago. That's the same tumor that Kennedy had. I interviewed two glioblastoma survivors for my film. They're not included in the film, but I have them as extras. But so he has cured that. So, you know, but then to give this, not give my cousin the option just to have it first choice, you know, it's really interesting. It's like sort of like a civil rights issue, in my opinion. It's like you have the right to deny all treatment and say, I'm just going to go home and die, but you do not have the right to choose that treatment that Brzezinski has had been using for 30 years. So I'll quickly cover the other ones. If you have, it's interesting, since the peptide discovery, which is sort of lengthy to describe, but he realized that these peptides he discovered affect the genes in the system when he's replenishing the body with these things. And it's basically a gene-targeted drug, no different than things like Avastin and Gleevec and things like that are on the market today for cancer. So he didn't realize that mechanism until they mapped the human genome. And once that happened, all the gene-targeted drugs started coming out, and he was able to really hone in his craft. So basically what he does, if you have lung, liver, anything of the sort that isn't within a clinical trial like brain cancer, is I'll preface it with this. The former head of the NIH in 2006 wrote an article in the U.S. News and World Report talking about how there will be a day in oncology where the oncologist will draw the blood of the patient, insert that blood into a computerized database, and that database, based on the gene signature of that blood and other ingredients, it will pick from an array of all of the gene-targeted drugs ever studied and approved that are on the market, and it chooses from all the clinical trial data ever done, so say there's a drug approved for lung cancer, but Brzezinski's patient has liver cancer, but this drug approved for lung cancer had a lot of great clinical data with people that had lung and liver cancer, but it got approved for lung, not liver. So he'll take that drug and give it to that patient. So I'm sorry, I got a little ahead of myself.
About 30 seconds to let you know, and then we'll pick it up.
Okay. He just said that the machine will spit out a piece of paper, give the dosage and schedules and exactly what to give this patient based on only a gene-targeted drug regimen. That's precisely what Brzezinski's doing today in his private practice without a computer but with his brain. So he's got it's a whole nother side to his story that opens up a new world. So,
Well, this is, you know, sounds more and more interesting the more I hear you speak of what this could do. And so it does frustrate me a little bit that there are people out there who probably could benefit from this, and there's just a lot of hoops and even walls that sometimes are impossible to get through. So we're going to talk more about some of this frustration and maybe what we can do about it when we return to the Skillful Living Room on the Business Talk Radio Network in just a few minutes. Well, welcome back to the Skillful Living Room. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Finkelstein, and we're in the middle of this conversation with Eric Merola, the director and producer of the Brzezinski movie. And, you know, it's frustrating, as we were talking about, that there are people out there and there are all these barriers. So I was wondering what you envision will happen over the next year or two. Is there any shifting? Are you getting support from people in notable places?
Yeah, I have. I don't know. Some people might think I'm a little naive, but I'm very optimistic that this medicine can be pushed through. It's got too many years behind it, and too many battles have been won on the behalf of the Brzezinski sort of camp, where, you know, they haven't completely been defeated yet. But yeah, to answer your question, I think it needs people like in positions of power and positions of influence to help sort of push this further and sway it. Tony Robbins, the really famous motivational speaker, has seen the film. He's been very excited about it. He tweeted it out to his 1.8 million Twitter followers, and been in communication with his people almost on a weekly basis. He's been giving into a lot of I'm not really allowed to say who, but a lot of A-list celebrities and people within politics, et cetera. And I just think it's like anything, when you cause a shift this big, it takes time, and it takes a lot of time to build that momentum to really, you know, hit the tipping point. And I think it's early in the process for that. But yeah, I mean, I think more people have seen it that have, like, for instance, David Axelrod has seen, on the flip side of the coin, someone like David Axelrod, Obama's senior advisor, or at least at the time was, he has seen the film and claimed he wanted to open up a new investigation and et cetera, you know, how important this is. And, you know, he's getting ready to leave the White House and not a peep from anyone. So I really think that it's a matter of getting some people in positions of power to have the courage to step up open up new congressional hearings and put this out in the public sphere again and let people understand what's going on. And I just really think that, you know, we are based on we the people, and any major shift in, again, what I consider a civil rights issue has not occurred without people really standing up. And I think we just need the equivalent of another Rosa Parks in regards to Brzezinski and cancer treatment, frankly, metaphorically, you know. But.
Yeah, and there's no question that, you know, what Dr. Brzezinski has developed seems to merit such support, and the results, I hope, obviously, would be that this will be studied in earnest and made available in the interim for those who choose it, just because, as you said, this is a matter of free choice, and people should have a right to choose therapies, even if they're perhaps somewhat yet marginal or even questionable. I think that people have a right to choose, as long as something is not harmful. The other issue, though, is that this is, as I said at the very introduction of the show, is that I believe this is a societal question, that this is just one example of what happens in a society when there are institutions that sort of resist change, and maybe those people in power who really want to quell any emergence of anyone new who might ultimately be in power has nothing to do with the common goal of health or well-being or free liberties. It seems to be, as we know in corrupt politics, seems to be sometimes just how individuals control our world. And it is one of those things that then it requires the people to take action on the ground level and to raise their voices. And I think, you know, the film itself, obviously, to raise awareness is a big step in that direction. How do people see this film if they have had not access to it yet? And what other contact information might you provide?
Sure. The website is a great way to see the trailers and lots of clips from the film. You can also order the DVD from the website or Amazon. We're currently trying to get a television deal both in the UK and the US. But I'll give out the website really quickly. It's I'm going to spell it after I say it, but it's BrzezinskiMovie.com, and it's spelled BrzezinskiMovie.com. Movie.com. If you even if you misspell it and do a Google search, you'll eventually get it. But
I thought it was engrossing. I mean, I think that, you know, what you did, I think, which was very helpful, was to provide a lot of information and even the documentation that you were able to shoot establish credibility. I think it's not always easy to do, and sometimes doesn't translate well in every medium, but I think in a case like this, people tend to be skeptical, I think appropriately so.
Yeah.
So I think what you did was you made an attempt to really provide enough information and show enough documentation that people would at least suspend judgment. And, you know, this is a case from my point of view that people should suspend judgment, because one day you might be in that position where you have a disease that there's no great current therapy out there. And I would imagine each one of us would want to know that if there was something that appealed to us, we would have some access and some reasonable right to choose that approach.
And, absolutely. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, that to me is the bottom line here. I mean, it's wonderful that a man like Dr. Brzezinski was able to do something like this, which in a disease category like cancer, which is so not only broad but so scary for so many people and does affect so many people, this could be a remarkable breakthrough for humanity. But there's just the principle in my mind that is very important for us in a country, as you said, that is supposedly democratic, but the medical system seems a little less democratic than other institutions within the system.
Absolutely. And you talked about the documents in the film earlier. You know, I went from juggling my freelance work to trying to get 6 months of trying to convince Brzezinski to trust me to do this. And I just wanted to concentrate on the patients. And my big thing was the medical records at the time. You know, got to get the medical records, show the audience the reality of this. They really were diagnosed. They really did, you know, be treated only by this treatment. And they really were cured. And they've been on 5 years on. And here's the clinical trial data they were in, and et cetera. And then when I spent more time with him, he started telling me about a lot of the really bad things that are going on with the state government trying to take away his license, the federal government trying to throw him in prison, the National Cancer Institute, who visited his clinic and verified that he was curing brain cancer and then went behind his back and tried to rig his clinical trials. And you've got patent infringement involved. It's all these ingredients. And I just looked at him and I said, that's great, but I can't put that in the film unless we can prove all of that. And after spending more time with him, he had it all organized, because a lot of this information he had already sent out to congressmen and senators, the heads of the New York Times, CBS, NBC, way back in the 90s when all this was occurring, because he had all the documentation. The internal memos were leaked out to him from the NCI itself and the NIH. Anyway, so when he had it all laid out and it was all there, and using the same sort of, I don't know, ammunition, if you will, that the resistance likes to use to put Brzezinski down, that's exactly the ammunition we're using back to verify the legitimacy of it and the events as well. So,
well, that was very well done. And I have to say, before we go into the break, that we need to take our hats off to Dr. Brzezinski. Obviously, not only is he brilliant to have established this medical discovery, but to maintain the records the way he did to support his own cause eventually was great. So we'll be back to talk to Eric Merle as we close. Well, welcome back to the Skillful Living Room. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Finkelstein, and we're going to wrap up today's show with Eric Merle, the director of the documentary Brzezinski, the movie. Again, talking about Dr. Brzezinski, I just wonder, he must have quite a support mechanism for his work. And in some of the materials that I've read through, he's got a facility that's, what, almost 50,000 square feet, producing some of these products, and he must have a lot of people helping him.
Absolutely. The facility that's 50,000 square feet is actually just where he produces the antineoplastons. He has a whole separate clinic in a neighboring town of Houston. That's four floors. He's got nearly 400 employees. He now has four board-certified oncologists working for him now. One of them came from Johns Hopkins this year. So it's really exciting. This year has been exciting because actual board-certified oncologists are leaving their prior positions in conventional treatment and working for him. These are mainstream guys, not fringe guys. And he has his own MRI machines. He has a whole operation, you know, running. So, he's got a good support system. And he's got people coming from all over the world to be treated by him. He has people that speak many different languages. You know, it's pretty fascinating. And it's completely under the radar, and no one knows about it except for the people that are lucky enough to know. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is an extraordinary story, and obviously he must be a remarkable man. Let me ask you a question. If people are listening and want to support him, is there a mechanism? Are there is he looking to raise money? Does he need support in other ways that you can direct our listeners?
Traditionally, something like this, it's very difficult to have like a big money bomb or have people send in donations. You need there are enough people out there, like the Gates people, you know, and you know Bloomberg and people like that, that have that kind of money that can write a check for $25 million, like just like that. So that's what he's been trying to do, and he's been getting really close along the way. But everybody sort of at the last minute bails. But to answer your question, I think if people just called up the clinic, I'm sure they would be happy to take donations, to fund these phase 3 trials. I've been talking to him about opening up a nonprofit, independently, where all money would funnel right into him. But I think, again, we're still early in the game, and I think it takes some time. I think we need people like the Tony Robbins and then more people like that to step up and really if we're going to launch a nonprofit to raise money, we have to launch it with a big bang. And we've even been talking to Stand Up for Cancer, which is really funny. I'm going to follow that as well. They said, Brzezinski can absolutely apply for our funding, and I'm going to be following that very closely. And if my one-hour version of this film ends up on television, which is hopefully going to next year, I'm going to cover that intensely and see what the outcome of that is. It would be a nice fine example if they reject him, given everything else that they're giving money for is practically parallel to what he's doing theoretically as far as
hope some of this moves forward to the next level, and I thank you again for being my guest today and sharing your message, not only in the movie that you've created, but in terms of your own perspective on it. So thank you again, Eric.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You've been listening to the Skillful Living Room. If you'd like to listen to this show again or share it with a friend, you can log on to the Business Talk Radio's website, businesstalkradio.net, and go to the archive podcast section. For more information on the show and my work at Sunraven, visit theskillfullivingroom.org. And please email me with any questions or comments to michael@theskillfullivingroom.org. In the interim, we'll be back next week. But in the interim, I was going to say, just take care of yourself, breathe, and go check out this movie. Well, Brzezinski, the movie. And we'll be back to talk to you in 7 days.